right, you're on the Arms Room with Glenn.
And John.
And Matt.
Woo!
I don't have a headset, so it's weird.
It's been so long since you've been on the show with us, Matt.
Yeah. I know. It brings me back, though.
And we've got Adam. And
Adam's here, so we have someone who, like, we didn't open the show with Damn It Mason, which is fun.
We've got.
Which ruins my t-shirt idea.
Everything rolled in perfect order. The music came on, and then as it faded out, we came on.
Except for the actual host of the show being just a minute late.
I was a little late. Well, I wasn't actually late right. to
Clint
the.
Clint Stilson, Google him.
I wasn't.
Got stuff to do.
Boom, there. I need no excuses.
Can I drop this mic?
I got things to do. Drop the mic. Walk away. No, I had another meeting at the office here. I had to step out to, but yeah. Other than that, everything went perfectly.
It was great.
The master.
Glad to be here.
The master has returned. Remember all those good old days when Adam used to come and do our show?
Yeah, and we would get sound effects, and the volume was never jacked up.
And then he was ashamed of us.
And then he was ashamed, and he left. I want nothing more to do with you, idiots. All right.
I recall it going down almost exactly like that.
Doesn't sound very nice at all, actually.
Crying in the parking lot again, I'm worried.
All right. We are in the Cowtown studio, brought to you by Cowtown Range. This show brought to you by our good friends at AR500 Armor.
I like those guys.
Make sure you check them out at AR500Armor.com. Remember, as an independence training student, you do get a 10%. Discount.
Yeah. What is it?
10%.
10%. That's what I thought it was.
Yeah. All the time. And actually, until they opened their showroom, those people who came to the AR500 training events, I think they were getting 15%.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's up to and including the week the showroom opens. Yeah. So good stuff. All right. I was so busy last week, I don't even know what happened in the world. Did something happen?
I don't know.
What happened? I know there's all kinds of crazy stuff that happened.
Oh, yeah, there were earthquakes. We talked about that.
Great giant pumpkin rolled down the street.
Oh, yeah, the giant pumpkin that rolled down the street.
We will rebuild.
Yeah.
Some giant 350 inflatable pumpkin, like Peoria or some gross place on the west side, rolled down the street and, like, took out lights and people were running from it. It was pretty cool. It's like the Kool-Aid Man, but Halloween.
So, like, just
pretty fantastic.
Sidestep. Yeah. Let it roll on by. I don't know.
Nah, seems confusing.
If it worked, they do it in movies.
Too much. This weekend, let's talk about this last weekend. This last weekend, I was going to say this upcoming weekend, but this last weekend, we had a ton of training.
How'd that go? How'd classes go?
I'm exhausted. That's how it went.
It's good.
All day Friday with Carbine, and then Navy SEAL Foundation Friday night.
Yeah.
So Josh and I were out there till late doing night vision stuff, and I got tired. But here's the benefit.
Who got a Navy diver?
First Tactical was out there doing a big event at the Cowtown Range. And so they were like, hey, come over and see us. You know, make sure you guys come over and check us out. And you know, we were pretty busy training, but I left Josh to handle the Navy SEAL thing, and I went over to talk to the guys. And they were catering that event with steak and lobster tail.
First, yeah, I hate you.
So I'm like,
someone has to do it.
I don't mind if I do.
Why not you?
So I ate phenomenal food, and then of course I took an awesome plate back to Josh. But here's the important part of the story. I took a plate with a whole giant steak, an entire giant lobster tail. These were big lobster tails, and like two or three chicken breasts, and Josh ate all of it.
Yeah, guys, I don't believe it.
Carnivore.
work out with the guy. Work out with the guy.
No, he's intense, dude.
Yeah.
He's intense.
I was like, what are you doing with those 90-pound dumbbells? You're going to do shrugs? He's like,
curls.
Curling them.
It's like, fuck.
Yeah. He's a beast. Beast. Next day, we did a defensive handgun with low light, no light. So that means we get to the range at 7, leave at 11.
Mm-hmm.
It's a long day.
Yeah.
So then the next day, advanced handgun. Yesterday, advanced handgun, and actually got to go home relatively on time. So, yeah. I mean, I love it, right? That's the part of being involved with a training company that I love is the actual training. But, man, let me tell you what. It's just
the hours get long.
It's long, man. It's long. But it was good. So this coming weekend, of course, we have open range days back at Cowtown Range. Woo. Yeah. So make sure that you come to Cowtown Range this weekend, Saturday and Sunday, 8 a.m. until 5 p.m. where people stop showing up. We got open range, a lot less restrictive than other open ranges. And we'll have an action bay there so that you can shoot and move and shoot at steel targets and do all that kind of cool stuff.
Draw from your holster, too.
That's right. Yeah, shoot, move, work from a holster, do all the cool stuff you can't do anywhere else. And then we'll have some vendors there. We'll have a machine gun vendor there one day, and Nat Warfare will be there another day doing a bunch of cool moving target stuff. So no reason not to show up. Plus, we'll have the 50 there both days, just available for rent if anyone wants to come and rent the Barrett and bang away on our long-range platform all the way out to 1,100. Mm-hmm. It's a really unique range. You should come out and check it out if you haven't checked it out. It's fantastic. Yes. Fantastic. All right. What else is going on? Anything else? How'd your weekend go, John? This was your first weekend in 6 weeks?
Four
weeks where you didn't have to...
Wrangle children?
Wrangle your kids.
You're right. I didn't have to wrangle my children.
But you did have to wrangle other people's children.
Service support battalion worth of children.
Thank you for your service.
Yeah, it was terrible, dude. No, I had to play Army all weekend. That's right. It was
so you were wrangling older children.
Yes, older children with guns and face paint. They had to wear face paint this
time. Yes.
Yeah, it was pretty took me back, and it was terrible. That's how my weekend was.
We'll just yank my headset down into my face trying to take a drink of water. It's been a long weekend.
Yes. You should wake up with a refreshing ice cold calorie free Coke Zero.
So Friday, edit that out. As you were enjoying your steak and lobster, I was having, what did I have for dinner Friday? I had a Mountain Home beef stew.
What the hell did you send me some picture of messed up ramen noodles? I didn't even know what that picture was about.
Okay, so we just got one of our new lieutenants back from EOD school.
Yep.
And we're standing around Saturday morning. And he's eating. And I'm like, the hell is this guy eating? So I walk just a little bit closer. And he's eating ramen noodles right out of the package. And like sprinkling the flavor packet on the dry noodle. And then sprinkling the flavor packet. Yeah, it was pretty sad.
That's gross, dude.
Yeah, it was really gross. I saw.
That was a Snapchat, which they're like temporary messages. But if you know what you're doing, you can screenshot it. So I screenshotted that, and I don't know what I'm going to do with it yet, but I'm going to do something.
This is like almost...
That's blackmail.
Like, this is
that's pure blackmail, bro.
Okay. So I have to explain what I'm looking at here.
I don't think I've
ever
seen Glenn laugh so hard. He's crying. Right?
We have to explain what we're looking at here. We're looking at a picture of Mason, okay? Shirtless, which is bad enough.
And surprisingly or not surprisingly, completely devoid of body hair.
Completely devoid of body hair and muscular tissue, right? And he's standing...
No, he has muscular tissue. There's no muscular definition.
Okay, there you go. He's standing there with no shirt on, what appears to be in a hotel room...
With a creepy old guy.
With our friend Sean, tactical medic, in the background, who just...
Looks like he has quite the determination in his eyes.
Like a child molester, and freaking Mason looks like a child.
And the caption says,
"Hanging with Sean in Tucson." I need this photo, and it's going on the Arms Room Facebook page. You need to send that to me now.
Oh, God.
Oh, my gosh. That is an awful photo. Mason, why would you do that? Why would you put yourself in such a predicament?
I've sent him some blackmailing things, but I don't. Maybe he doesn't know how to screenshot it.
I bet he's going to figure out now, though.
Bet I'm not going to send him anymore.
We heard about your Snapchatting him a video you taking a dump.
I was angling it so you see everything.
Oh, the life of Mason. That poor guy.
Sent.
All right. You got it to me?
Sent.
Oh, that is so fantastic. I can't wait. I can't wait for that to be on my electronic devices. Oh, heavens. Mason, have some respect for yourself.
But he said he loved me.
He said he was different.
He said it was different. Oh, my gosh. That was so awful.
Well, now that we've run this show completely off the tracks.
That's all right. All right. Well, that's okay because today is our roundtable, so we pretty much do whatever we want.
Yeah, pretty much.
All right. So, roundtable today.
Yes. What are we talking about?
We have three topics.
Okay.
We have three topics today. Historical firearms, vehicle emergencies, and shooting just for fun. All right. So we're going to talk about, we're going to start with historical firearms. All right. So I'm going to start this one, and then Matt, you can start the vehicle emergencies, whatever that means to you. And then John will let you start the shooting just for fun thing.
All right.
Oh, wait. We have to go back to a story earlier last week. Remember that one time where you called me out when we were at the range and you were like, I'm faster than you? Remember that one time?
Oh, yeah. And then like 10 seconds later, you stumped my ass. No. I beat you twice.
I have to give you props where props are deserved. You did a very good job.
Thank you.
Yes, you did a great job beating me when I wasn't competing. So yeah, then
that was it. Then I love how you totally make excuses. And here's the best part: all you did was make excuses all morning.
I did.
Oh well, I've never shot this gun. Oh well,
I didn't say I haven't shot this gun. That's not what I said. Oh well,
I don't carry this gun. I don't shoot this gun much. I can't shoot this gun out here. My magazines keep sticking on reloads. All I heard were excuses.
And so then when you were like, "Oh, you're giving me his excuses," then I was like, "All right, let's do it again."
And you beat me.
Stomped. It's a more appropriate word.
Yeah, mostly.
Yeah, I'm just kidding, dude. You did a great job. John did a very excellent job in shooting last week, and he definitely at our company meeting, and he gets props where they're deserved. He did a great job, and he did beat me pretty fair and square the first couple times. I was solid.
So before we get going any further, since we're not on the air tomorrow, tomorrow is Marine Corps birthday, so happy birthday, all you fucking jarheads out there.
Oh.
That's it. That's all.
That's it? Happy birthday.
Happy birthday.
Cool.
So,
and Wednesday is
Veterans Day. I will be at the Veterans Day parade.
So,
wrangling more children.
Are you going to be in the parade?
No.
The unit?
No.
Are you just going to be at the parade with the unit?
I'll be at the parade wrangling children to make sure they don't kill themselves. No.
Thank you for your service.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Thank you for your service.
Thank you for yours, Glenn.
Thank you for yours, Matt.
Thank you for yours, Adam.
Thank you for yours, Matthew. Oh, Adam. Glenn.
Self. Hey, you see where the Harump. Self. Did you see where the 101st is?
We're getting the band back together.
Yeah, we're getting the band back together.
Yes, put me in, coach. That's what I'm saying. Have gun, will travel. I'll sign whatever waivers are necessary. Let's do this. Find me.
Probably not going to work. Find me.
Probably not going
to work. Google me, Snapchat me. I'm available.
Yep. Snapchat. Twitter sphere. Yeah, so they're sending just the 101st Division headquarters to Kuwait / Iraq.
Yeah.
So we'll see how that works out. Here for the high definition helmet cam footage.
Guilty as charged. We'll see. Division HQ, we'll see what happens.
Yeah.
Won't be too exciting. Won't be what we hope for. It never is. All right. Back to the other thing.
All right. Back to the other thing.
All right. So historical firearms. Here's how I'm gonna start that. I think that there is one American historical firearm that stands above all other historical firearms.
Well, I can think of a short list that it's probably on that list. We may or may not be in agreement.
Lever action.
Ooh.
The lever action is America's historical firearm. And here's why. I'm gonna give you my take on this. First of all, it totally redefined the American West. Right?
Okay.
It was a carbine that just totally redefined the way gunfights happened, the way hunting happened, the way,
war,
justice happened. Combat. And then, you take a look at things like the Civil War, and it totally redefined how warfare was done. Okay. You know, you went from guys doing, single shot muskets.
Three stud.
With, I think back then, and I don't remember exactly how many rounds the, old school levers held, but they were 10 or 11.
Yeah.
Something like that. I mean, a lot. And all of a sudden, now we have self-contained cartridges, that we're loading into this stuff. It was just a whole total redefinition of how things were done. I think the lever-action carbine is kind of what created the desire to go beyond that, to get into semi-automatics and all that. And the lever-action carbine held its ground for a long time, really, until the, semi-automatic wave
came. I feel like that was kind of the one where people were like, okay, well, what else is possible?
Mm-hmm.
And, with your cartridges, your increased rate of fire. I think that's what really was one of the catalysts. Because firearms for a long time, you know, you had your Gatling gun, you had your muskets.
Yeah, that was pretty much just kind of stuck.
Yeah.
It wasn't a lot of massive development.
Yeah, some kind of muzzle loading device. And there was a lot of ingenuity in there. Like, you know, John Moses Browning had a lot of very interesting designs of like muzzle loaders. He had that one muzzle loader with, I want to say it was 5 rounds, I believe. And it was like a sliding magazine type thing that you would preload five of these things. And then you would slide them into place, you know, replace the cap, fire it, slide it over one slot, you know, replace the cap, fire it. So, I mean, that obviously increased your rate of fire, but then every time you had to reload, now you're reloading 5 more packets or whatever he was loading in there. So there's you know, there was a lot of people trying to do it, but I think the lever action was just, if I was going to choose America's historical firearm, that's what I want. Arizona recently chose a historical firearm that went with the single action army, the Colt single action army, which is great. That's a very historical firearm gun that won the West or whatever. But I still think lever action is America's historical firearm, hands down. That's the gun. And I think everyone should own one.
Yeah.
They're a blast to shoot. They're a lot of fun. They're incredibly viable still today. After all these years, Old West times to now, I would still take a lever action into a gunfight. You know? No reason not to. I mean, they hold 7 to 11 rounds, most of them. And, I mean, I'm sure there's a little bit of variance there somewhere, but that's an incredibly, incredibly viable piece of equipment for a fight inside your home or just outside your home or a civil uprising, Baltimore riot kind of situation, for hunting, for whatever. A viable piece of equipment. Love it. What?
Nothing.
All right, so what were you going to say?
I'm kind of a traditionalist, so I was actually going to bring up the 1911 because it basically changed the way handguns were thought about and used in war as well. Like, it, you know, it was a huge deal when the 1911 came to be, because up until that point, you were still on revolvers. So you would shoot your 5, 6, whatever rounds, your break action revolvers or your single shot revolvers, whatever revolver you had at the time. And then the 1911 comes around, and it's like the first mass produced semi-automatic gun that has extra magazines. So you can shoot your 7 or 8 rounds. Then you can take this piece of metal out and put a new piece of metal that has 7 or 8 more bullets in it and continue to fight. I think the 19, if I had to pick a gun, I'd go with the 1911 because I still believe it is also a viable piece of equipment today.
I'll agree that the 1911 is still a viable piece of equipment. Yeah, it's a gun I would still take.
I still have one. I have two at home. Yeah.
I would still take a 1911 to a fight. Now, it wouldn't be my first choice.
No.
Just like a lever wouldn't be.
The design still works. It's still used. Like, the technology made 1911.
Yes.
It's still being used competently and proficiently, you know.
Competition and combat.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah.
People still use it today.
That's what I'd pick.
All right. So what do you think, Matt? What's the most historical firearm?
I think the M2 50 cal machine gun. We're still using them.
Okay.
The one we used in Afghanistan, one of them was used in Korea. It's been around since, I don't know, what year were they introduced? Do you guys know?
I don't.
The Deuce? Ooh, yeah. When did John Moses Browning make the Deuce?
Forever ago.
I'm looking it up right now. Keep going.
I mean, find me another weapon that's provided more impact, whether it's mounted on a truck, whether it's in a stationary position, whether it's on a plane, on that side of a helicopter. I mean, the things are everywhere. They're pretty simple to use. I mean, pending your headspace and timing is correct. But.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Yeah.
Pending the fact you put it together properly.
But, you know, Mark 19s, those went down all the time. 240s, yeah, they're good, but not a 50 cal.
Nope.
But for something that's been around since whenever this thing's been around.
1933, it went into service.
To still being used efficiently, the preferred heavy support weapon of choice for everyone I was with. You know, if you had one truck and you could pick a Mark 19, a 240, or a 50 cal, what would you put on top of that?
50.
50. What about all you, day. Bud?
50.
All right. So I'm going with the M250.
Okay. M250.
That'll work.
The old Deuce. All right. I like it. I like it. All right. So now I want to say the most historical firearm that I own. Right? So it actually is not. I do own a lever gun.
You do.
But I don't think
that it's kind of new school.
It's a new lever gun. Like, yeah, it's new school. I don't know, a new production. I think the most historical firearm I probably own is I've got a Winchester Model 6922 long rifle, bolt action, with a 5-round magazine that was used by my great-grandfather. My nice. Great-grandfather passed it to my grandfather, who passed it to my father, who passed it to me, I passed it to my son. So that's probably the most historical firearm I own, or at least the firearm that has the most historical value to me.
Right.
And it's still incredibly accurate. I still use it to hunt from time to time. It's still incredibly accurate. It still gets the job done. If well-maintained, a firearm will outlast any people, mm-hmm. for sure. So what do you own, John? What's the most historical firearm you own?
Well, it's not actually mine. It belongs to my wife, but it's a god-awfully old Sears and Roebuck 22 single-action bolt gun.
Probably bought from
Sears and Roebuck. Probably by her grandfather. In the, I would imagine they've had, it's at least as old as like the 50s. I would,
yeah.
You know, and that's what she learned how to shoot on. I'm assuming that's what her dad learned how to shoot on. And her dad and her brother are the only three people I've ever met that can shoot it correctly. Because there is, like, if you stand back and you look at it long enough, there is a bend in that freaking barrel.
It's crooked.
It's crooked. I know it is. I can't hit a bull in the ass with a 2x4 with that thing, man. It's terrible. But hand it to her or her brother or her dad all day long. It's an awesome little gun. It's fun to play with.
What do you got, Matt?
My grandpa was in the Philippines in World War II, and he came upon a... this bolt-action Japanese rifle with a bayonet.
Like an Arisaka?
And a bunch of stuff from some guy who apparently owned it. that was my grandma's for the longest time. And I'm still trying to – just need to get out there and bring it back. But, I haven't seen it since I was a kid, so I don't really know exactly what it is. But I would say, aside from – I don't really have it – like in my personal possession, I don't really have any historical firearms per se, but that would probably be it. Next time I'm in San Francisco and driving back,
should pick it up.
Yeah. There's like the flag. This guy's all his personal stuff that was with it. His whole kit, rifle, bayonet. So, we just found it laying there next to this dead guy. It was so strange.
Amazing.
In the middle of World War II in the Philippines. It's weird.
I think that if people who own firearms don't, you know, I sometimes see people like open up their gun safes and all they have are modern firearms. Yeah. It's like just that's guilty. All they've got is modern stuff. It's like. Man, you should, if you're a firearms owner, you should make it a priority to get your hands on a piece of history, you know, and
if
and
I were gonna
some family historical or World War historical or something. Like, I don't care like if you go down to the store and buy an M1 Garand.
Was selling Mausers for, what, 90, $70 yeah. a pop? Just go grab something.
Yeah.
Get a Mauser, if I were going to
even a Mauser or a Mosin or like yeah. these yeah, things need, have been around, man.
Winchester 1897. would be the one I would buy. Winchester 1897 trench gun.
Yeah, those are pretty legit,
dude. That's a cool piece of equipment, man.
Those are cool trench guns.
Weren't they initially proposing to outlaw those because...
Well, they were devastating.
Yeah, they're like, that should be against the Geneva Convention. It's like trench guns, shotguns, is because they're so devastating.
Yeah.
That's how you know you need to get a gun.
That's yeah, right.
That's how you know you want it.
Yeah. If someone wants to ban it, that's the one you need to buy.
Yeah.
Yeah, so look at, you know, get some kind of historical firearm. Own a piece of history. Own some kind of firearm that you're
buy
like,
a Garand.
This is historical. But not a new one. Like, find
no, yeah, old, not a new one. Buy one from the CMP program.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, buy something old. Own something that's, you know, like...
America.
Yeah, very cool stuff. All right. Vehicle emergencies. So...
Like what's coolest I've seen or
whatever, man. Throw it out there. What do you got?
Oh, man.
Or either the coolest you've seen or the worst you've ever been in.
Okay. I haven't really been in bad accidents. I got rear-ended by this lady going about 60 miles an hour like 3 days before I joined the Army. And so I hadn't told my mom I was joining yet. And so now I was like, now I got to tell her not only – was a pretty gnarly car accident, but I'm also joining the Army in 3 days. So, like, surprise! And so she clearly wasn't thrilled about that. I've seen a number of good ones. The one that I really remember was a couple buddies had just gotten out of the Army. I was coming back from this little get-together they had, and this was in Clarksville. And I'm coming off that freeway, like 101st Parkway, onto the main drag where all the gates come out to. and it's raining, and I see this cop car, like, chasing. It's this white pickup truck comes off the freeway. Cop car's behind him, spins out, or I don't know what, but just ate it right into the support thing on the highway.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh, man, this is nuts. And I ran up, and by the time I really figured out what was going on and ran back to my car, there was, like, 15 different Army medics and, you know, PJs and SF medics, and I was like, oh, okay. And it was pretty good place to have a serious car accident. But I'm trying to think. I'm not on the road as often as you guys are, so I haven't seen too many crazy ones. I carry my trauma kit in my car, and then, you know, I have my, basic essential IFAC in my little messenger bag. Haven't seen too many crazy accidents. I'd say that was probably the nuttiest, where something was actually doable and it wasn't just like, eh. Get some plastic bags and hose.
Get the shovel, boys. Shovel and a mop and clean this up.
Yeah.
What do you think, John? What's the worst one you've ever seen?
When I was a kid, my dad was a volunteer firefighter on the East Coast. And I'd go on a lot of calls with my dad because we'd be out driving. And this was back, and he'd have his little red light and he'd throw it on the roof of his truck. And we'd just, whenever there was a call.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going up, we're getting up by this accident, and I look, and this T-top Camaro had like spun out because this chick was driving like a retard. And I look, and on one side of the car, there's this headless body, and I was like, oh, that's kind of gross. And then as we drive by the car, Dad had to slow down to like kind of weave through, and I'm just being a little kid, like got my nose up on the glass looking out. There's her head laying in the floorboard.
Ooh.
I was like, oh, that's...
And John's been this way ever since.
And John was broken from that point forward. But other than that, like, I haven't seen any real gnarly accidents. But as far as vehicle emergencies, I'd say the worst vehicle emergency was that night you and I were in South Tucson, and my timing chain just decided to stop working on my truck, and we're sitting at an intersection.
Middle of the intersection.
So don't lose your shit. Keep your brains together. Because when you panic, it doesn't help anything. That's the key to surviving vehicle emergencies.
You know, I've been in a lot of accidents, and I don't know why that is, but I've also seen a lot of accidents.
How many speeding tickets do you have?
How many have I ever gotten in my life?
The last 3 years.
Oh, I don't get them as much anymore. I mean, I average about one every 2 years these days. Yeah, I don't.
Generally, not even in Arizona.
Yeah, and usually they're in other states. It's
getting out of another state, getting back into Arizona.
Yeah, trying to return.
You need to get back.
I used to get a lot. In fact, by the time I was 18, I had already had my license suspended because I'd already been through defensive driving school and traffic survival school, which is – so you go through defensive driving school to avoid getting points, right? You go through traffic survival school – to avoid getting a suspension, but that wasn't enough. I actually got my suspension before I had even attended the traffic survival school because I had so many tickets, all for speeding. You know, I was just, as a kid, I was a wild kid, man. I got a lot of tickets. I don't have as many tickets now. I kind of settled down a little.
That's good.
But I get about once every 2 years. I probably get pulled over at least every 6 months. And it's almost always for speeding.
Wait. So you get pulled over once every 6 months, but probably a ticket once every 2 years?
About that, yeah. About 25%.
Are you polite and respectful to the...
No, what I do is, see, I pull out my phone and I start recording the officer. And I'm like, am I being detained? Am I being detained? So I pull all that really gay crap. Mm-hmm. And that helps me with my interaction with law enforcement.
I don't think that's how that works.
Oh, yeah, that's right. No, I am. I'm just respectful and courteous, and they're respectful and courteous, and then we have a really nice conversation. And yeah, we pretty much all act like adults, and then we're done.
Wow.
Yeah, weird. It's interesting, isn't it?
I can actually beat your driver's license story.
Oh, okay.
I got my driver's license when I was 15 and 8 months in the state of Virginia.
Okay.
By the time I was 16 and a half, I no longer had a driver's license.
Yeah.
Three reckless driving tickets. And
reckless
one car
driving,
accident.
Even. Oh wow! So you're a safe one too.
Oh yeah, I was all over it, bro. I didn't get my license back until I was after I graduated high school, actually. So my senior year of high school, I rode the bus.
Yeah, like a boss.
Yes. It was terrible.
Riding on there with all the freshmen.
Ugh.
That's so fantastic. So, yeah, that was about, I think that's probably about the worst I've driven in my life. But I actually had a goal when I was, before I turned 18, I wanted to have gotten pulled over organically, all right? I didn't want to just aggravate cops that I knew were already there. I had a goal that by the time I hit 18, I wanted to be pulled over 21 times. And I just blew that out of the water.
Totally random goal of yours? Was this a dare?
Like,
there has to be a story there.
I'm glad that most people who know me today did not know me when I was younger. I was not a nice person at all, you know? That's why when people talk about, like, do you keep in contact with people you knew when you were younger? Like, no.
That's why they're childhood friends. Because they're staying in the childhood.
I have basically, nobody that I still hang out with ever or even keep in contact with from the time I was a young man. I was not a very nice person. But yeah, luckily all that's changed. Thanks, Jesus.
Kind of. Big shout out to Jesus.
I'm just saying. All right. All right. So worst accident I've ever seen. Actually, worst accident I've ever seen was when I thought a guy was splattered all over the windshield. And it turned out to not be. And well, that was pretty bad.
It's a plus.
Yeah. So it was actually in the pouring rain. We were coming down almost to Black Canyon City, coming down the I-17. It was pouring rain, like the kind of rain where you don't drive more than about 30 or 35 miles an hour, like monsoon, you know, God's angry at the earth kind of rain. And it is just absolute tons of water coming down.
Trying to drown the peasants again.
Yeah, trying to drown the peasants. And this guy comes flying by us, all of us. There's about three of us all kind of traveling together. This guy comes flying by us, and just as he goes around that first corner there by the what exit is that? The Bumblebee exit. Mm-hmm. Just as he comes flying around the corner, man, he totally loses it and slides off the left side of the road. And so we all kind of see him slide off on the left side of the road, and so me and the guy behind me start to pull over, and as we're pulling over, the guy behind me totally loses it. He comes around the corner going way too fast. He totally loses it, is heading for the guardrail, just guns it, flies across the road and slams into that car that was already there. Rolls that car, kind of shoves it down, like rolls it and kind of shoves it down into this ditch. And the guy ends up kind of butt up. He's driving a little hatchback car. He ends up kind of butt up on the road. And so, I mean, this is like as we're pulling over, I'm just looking in my rearview mirror, see the whole thing happen in the rearview. So I jump out. I run up there. Me and the other guy, and so I'm like, why don't you take, you know, I always assume in an accident that I'm the guy who's ready for the most, you know, and that's not always true, but if you assume that, then you're better at handling things. And so I run up, and I just tell the guy, hey, why don't you take care of that guy, because the crazy thing was the guy who had first slammed in, like, almost immediately jumped out of his car, just a quick reaction or whatever. Just as that guy slammed into him, and I mean that guy literally just slammed that car right past the driver, so he was totally uninjured. I mean, totally freaked out, of course, because what just happened. But
probably pooped himself a lot.
So guy number the other guy pulled over with said, "Hey, you take care of him," and I went running up to the other car. And it's just, oh my gosh, it was so much rain coming down. And I run up there, and there was just, you know, it's super heavy rain. It's hard to see, and there's just red splattered all over the windshield. And I was like,
oh loud.
Dude, this is not going to be awesome. So I ran up there and looked in, and it was actually the guy had a big, giant red bandana that had come loose, you know, in the accident and had flown up. And just because of all the water and everything, it stuck to the windshield, you know. And so I was just like, ooh, good. But when we got up there, so he was kind of butt up up on the mountain, and he had a massive compound fracture in his femur. So it was totally snapped in half, out of the skin, and he was not breathing so well. I'm pretty sure he smashed his chest. I mean, there's not – unfortunately, even with all the knowledge and training and everything, it's like nothing I could do. You know, I mean, he's pinned in the car. It's up against the hill. It's kind of butt up. Luckily, the next person to pull over was a paramedic from up north who was going down to teach a wilderness first responder class down here in Phoenix. And so she was really, you know, obviously incredibly helpful because she had a greater skill set than I did at the time. And so, you know, we kind of teamed up and were able to do what we could for the guy, which was about it. You know, there's not really a whole lot you can do. You can keep him comfortable. You can stabilize him in place. That was it.
He's but gonna get cut out.
While we were waiting there, two more accidents happened, rear end accidents, people trying to come down the mountain and slow down. And I mean, it just poured rain on us the entire time. It was absolutely, we were just, everyone was just drenched, absolutely drenched. One person was pretty cool, stopped and actually popped out an umbrella and stood there and held it for us, which was really a nice gesture. We were already totally drenched to the bone, but it was a great, nice gesture of them to do that. And then it took, and this is just, you know, an example of how long it takes people to do things. It took DPS, Department of Highway Patrol was there probably about 30 minutes.
Yeah, it's and busy with the fire, entire state.
Fire was there about 45 minutes afterwards. So, I mean, it's just another example of, like, if we had an actual life-threatening situation on our hands and we wouldn't have been able to do anything about it at all, that person, they would have been picking up a corpse. There was absolutely no way that, you know, in 45 minutes those guys would have got there in time to save anybody's life. So, and yeah, they did. They popped off jaws of life and all that kind of stuff. And luckily, the other two accidents that happened were all minor. You know, just rear-ending kind of stuff as people were trying to get stopped in the rain. But it was kind of scary. We ended up actually talking, flagging down a trucker and telling him if he could start somehow radioing up to other truckers up to at Sunset Point, which is that rest area, and tell him to start coming down two by two. So that's exactly what they did. They just started coming down next to each other real slow.
Oh, this was from Sunset Point coming down into Phoenix?
Just forcing everybody to go super slow. Yeah, and imagine that in absolutely insane wet weather. So that was probably the worst accident I'd seen just because of the conditions. You know, I've seen accidents where people were hurt worse, but that one was the worst just because of the conditions.
For more danger.
Yeah, it was very dangerous. We were right there on the side of the road. I wouldn't say I put myself in harm being there, but it was probably the least comfortable I've ever been trying to respond to an accident just because of the location and the pouring down rain and all that. It was just, it was pretty nasty. Pretty nasty. But I think that's probably the worst accident. Though the most exciting accident I've ever seen was the one you and I saw.
Oh, yeah, the one that happened like, hey, look, that guy's going really, oh, crap, that dude just wrecked.
This guy goes flying by John and I up, we were coming home from training up in Chino Valley. This guy goes flying by us. It's, what's the speed limit there, 35?
I think it's 45. It's 45 right 45. There. Like it had just turned to 45.
And this guy goes flying by us, boom. And John is literally saying, that guy is going really fast.
Yeah, I turned to look at Glenn and I'm like, that guy's going really fast.
And then I was like, that guy's wrecking. He missed the they just put in that big roundabout there and he missed the roundabout. I had no idea it was there or just didn't see it or whatever, but he was doing at least 75.
Oh yeah.
Easy. I mean, he came by us like we were standing still.
It was a big lifted truck, right?
No, it was
like a Toyota Tundra, but yeah. he tried to rape the horse that they have in that roundabout with the front end of his truck.
That's
basically what he was
doing. I hate horses.
Maybe yeah, that exactly. Was it. He's a horse vendetta. So he hits the curb. Airborne's it over the curb, slams into the wall in the roundabout.
I missed all of this.
Did he miss the horses?
He did miss the horses.
Yeah,
he
not by much.
Didn't get to it. Slams into the thing and then rolls over onto his top. And yeah, John missed the whole thing because he turned to me to say, that guy's going really fast. And I'm like, no, that dude's wrecking. I mean, he just airborne it. Oh man, that was a...
That was crazy.
And they were both okay. The driver was a little busted up, but they were both okay.
The passenger was a lot drunk.
Yeah, the passenger was super drunk. And
the driver wasn't a lot drunk.
The driver
was stone cold sober. It's always ironic. My license is suspended. What do you expect? You want me to drive? You're crazy?
So I think they were coming back from Vegas. They were two brothers coming back from a big Vegas trip and trying to get home in time because that was a Friday night. I think they were trying to get home in time for the weekend or something like that.
Who knows?
Flying, man. Oh, that was good stuff. So that was probably the coolest accident I've ever seen just because it...
This is the fastest I've never seen.
Yeah, this is the irony of what happened. And again, it was another example of how long it takes help to get there. It was John and I jumped out, went to work. They were hurt. They were easily manageable hurt.
Oh, yeah.
And so John and I busted out our kits and started, you know, doing what we could do. And it was about 4 minutes until the cops got there, but that guy had no idea what to do.
Yeah, and he's then like, do you know what you're doing? Yes, I do. Okay.
He's like, okay. Yeah, that guy didn't care. 11 minutes before fire got there, 13 minutes before ambulance got there, and it was right at the 15-minute mark that they came over and said, okay, cool, we don't need you anymore.
Yep.
So, I mean, it was a 15-minute window from the time that it happened until the time that help was actually on station really doing something. And, again, if there had been a life threat there, that driver would have been dead. So, as it was, when I showed up, the seatbelt was wrapped around his neck. And he was pinned upside down. So the truck's upside down. So he's hanging with all his body weight on that seatbelt. So, I mean, that was an easy fix just to slice it free. But, I mean, you know.
Seatbelt, not his head.
Yeah.
Seatbelt, not his head.
I just cut his head off. I mean, it released the pressure.
Yeah.
Like, oh, crap. Oh, always forget.
Oh, man, I was supposed to cut the seatbelt. Sorry, guy. Sorry, fella. All right.
Stop squirming.
Seatbelt. Stop squirming.
Trying to get your head out of the
seatbelt. Whatever. All right. So shooting just for fun.
Something I don't do nearly enough.
We just don't, do we?
I think the last time I shot just for fun was at the Independence Training Christmas party last year, where we all took our 22s and went up to this sweet little shooting spot, and we shot fruit and vegetables. Mm.
Was I with...
Yeah, you were there.
That was last Christmas?
Yeah, because you destroyed my house after Mini Glenn tried to shove a water bottle down your throat.
Yeah, and then he thought he could run to you and hide.
Yes.
And you're like, nope, you're on your own on this one.
And you spilled
spaghetti
sauce all over.
I slipped chasing him, and I like
wrecked my trash can.
Spaghetti sauce all over my carpet. I owe you like a zero res.
No, you don't. I've got kids, bro. Don't worry about it.
Okay, well. Take that.
Yeah, that's a long time.
Yeah, going out shooting for fun.
That was the last time shooting.
Yeah.
That was the last time we've all been out just shooting for fun was almost a year ago. Because there was Mason was there.
Brian
was there, his family.
And then that was it, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. And all the small ones.
Yeah, and all
almost
our kids.
Almost a year. That's nutty.
Isn't that crazy how long it's been?
I feel like it was 5 or 6 months ago.
Christmas, it only comes once a year, buddy.
Yeah.
Usually right around the same time, typically.
Is it? Yeah, like almost the end of December, right before the new year starts.
Oh, that makes sense now that I think about it.
But you might be confused by all of the retail stores that had Christmas
before
Halloween.
Yeah, that's probably what's confusing you. Yeah.
That's why you're all screwed up about
stores.
It.
Go
out and just go get some fun stuff. Go get some tin cans and find a nice spot and just... Go do some plinking, man. It doesn't always have to be serious. Mm. It always has to be safe. It doesn't
like
always have
to
be
a
serious.
I would like to tell you a tin can Tannerite story from when I worked in a Label 1 trauma center.
Go.
Oh.
So they.
Speaking of shooting.
So we always get these like really vague calls about like what's coming in, right? And sometimes they oversell it, and sometimes they undersell it. Like, hey, we have a guy. You know, he's got an impalement to the neck. We're coming in. I'm like, okay. And he shows up, and it's like a wrought iron fence post going through and out. And we're like, oh. Okay.
Oh, this is kind of a big deal.
You should have elaborated. Thanks. Yeah. And so we get this call. And it's a Level 1 trauma center, so we see all sorts of stuff. And our thing was burns. And so we get this guy. They're like, oh, he's got something impaled in his head. We're like, is shooting accident, something impaled in his head. And I was like, I can only imagine what's coming in. And so he comes in, and he has like a Folgers tin coffee can lodged in his skull. And we're like, so what happened? And he just reeks of booze. He's like, well, my friend got this stuff called Tannerite, right?
See, I'm not the only one who gives stupid people Southern accents.
And,
I know.
Well, he had a Southern accent, so.
Well, this was in Texas,
if he
right?
was a well-spoken yuppie from the East Coast who went to a private school, I would have done that accent. But
well,
they
yeah,
just don't tend to impale things in their heads from
Tannerite. There I was with a Folgers coffee can.
Jeeves brought Tannerite to our sporting shoot. The horses have been rounded and gathered.
See?
No, so yeah. He and so we do the CAT scan. It was a CAT scan. So we got this like 3D image.
You got my CAT scan.
What's going on, right? And so he was like, I was like, how far away were you? He's like, oh, like 20, 30 feet. And I was like, how much Tannerite? He's like, oh, we filled that thing up. I was like, okay. And like nobody really on that team like knew what Tannerite was. And so I was explaining, I'm like, yeah, this is like possibly might be actually in this guy's brain. Like, that's some powerful stuff in that much, you know. And so we do this CAT scan, and you can see, like, the skull and then any non-tissue hard stuff, right? So you see the metal. Like, here's a skull, and the metal just dinged off his skull and then came back out. And so
it's like him,
the
like
CAT scan was really cool. Yeah, it was just under the skin. Like
wrapped around his bone.
But, I mean, that's because it hit right here and it was already a curvature. But I was like, man, if it was lower at the eye level, like you'd be going to the basement from the entrance. You wouldn't have even come through our, you know, you wouldn't even made a stop on us. And I'm like, oh, another body.
Oh, yeah, that guy's dead.
Yeah, fascinating. Lunch? You know, so.
Tannery seems to be a thing that injures a lot of people, didn't they?
Well, there was a kid.
We just had a kid get killed around here, right?
Yeah, smashed by a dryer door.
Yeah.
Seriously?
Yeah, well, it wasn't that. I mean, this was six, 8 months ago now, I guess.
It's this year.
It was this year, but yeah, the like 25 or 30 pounds in a dryer out in the desert.
What could possibly go wrong?
No, yeah. Apparently, the door could come from off of it and smash your face and kill you.
Crazy. Nah. Let's do this.
So, shooting for fun should always be safe.
Yes. Shooting for fun also has to be safe. Here's where I go to shooting for fun, because we just don't do it enough.
No.
Like, we train so much, but we just don't shoot for fun enough.
But we also enjoy training.
We do enjoy training.
But that also, all of our friends that enjoy shooting don't want to go out shooting with us, because we don't want to just go shooting for fun.
Right. Yeah. And so, like, I don't just want to drive out and go plink rounds into the dirt. Right?
Yeah.
But my casual shooting friends don't want to come, like, hey, let's go spend an entire day and 600 rounds of ammo trying to get every round to, you know, ping off that steel and do all this. And they're like,
it sounds boring.
I just want to shoot guns into the dirt and maybe some pumpkins. You know, like, good luck in the apocalypse. So it's like, yeah, you got to scale it down.
Yeah.
Remember where you came from. So.
Well, you know where I really kind of got reminded about shooting for fun was about this time last year, we started doing shooting experience stuff at Cowtown.
Yeah.
And when we started doing like these 50 cal experiences and full auto experiences and explosions and all that kind of stuff, just for fun, for clients, you know, and they would pay us to come out and shoot just for fun. And we'd be like, well, this is how you're going to do it. And this is how we're gonna. And it kind of took us a couple of times to relax a little bit and be like, this is just fun.
Okay, this is how you load this thing.
Yeah.
This is the deadly end. Keep it pointed that way.
Yeah.
Have fun.
Because what we found out was like people would start shooting. And they wouldn't be accomplishing what we wanted them to do. Like, you know, they wouldn't be hitting the target at 800 meters, or they wouldn't be shooting this particular target or whatever. And I would feel like kind of like frustrated, like as an instructor, like, oh, crap, I'm not getting this done. And what I found out is the more I just like kind of relaxed and was just like, hey, you're, you know, have a good time and enjoy yourself. And oh, no big deal. You didn't get that one. You'll get the next one.
Yeah, yeah.
They had a great time.
Yep.
We had people come out, shoot the 50 cal. They're just like, oh, that was awesome. I just shot the 50 cal. And in my mind, I'm thinking like, yeah, but you didn't hit any freaking thing. You know what I mean? Like, who freaking cares?
You barely hit the dirt. You
barely hit. But then they would be like, oh my gosh, but it was so much fun. You know? And you're like, yeah, but you just forget. You know? You forget what it's like to just have a good time.
Yep.
Now, one way that I still shoot for fun, one way that I still do it, and I just do this for fun, is the organic shoots.
Yeah.
Yeah, the organic shoots are a lot of fun, which is kind of what we did on that on that Christmas thing. And we've actually got another one coming up with my family soon, is that we put all our old veggies and fruit and all that we don't use or that goes bad, and we put it all into the freezer, and we freeze it all. And then when it's, you know, a lot and we have a full box, then we go out and we spread them all throughout the desert area we're going to shoot at. And we bring a big tarp and we open up the tarp so it's easy to clean up all our 22 brass. And then we bust out a whole bunch of 22 ammo and we bust out a whole bunch of 22 guns. And the kids just go nuts. And, you know, the wife and I have a good time and we shoot a little and the kids shoot a little and kids shoot a lot.
Yeah.
And they blow up. Because, I mean, like a frozen potato or apple or egg or cucumber or whatever you've got left over, you know, is if you're just going to throw it in the trash, freeze it instead. Take it out there. You can do the same thing with like blocks of ice, you know, freeze blocks of ice and take those out there and shoot ice, you know, because all those things are fun to shoot and you don't have to clean up afterwards. So it's that much more fun, you know. I mean, I'm still used to like training where it's like you go there and you haul out all these targets and you got to get everything all set up and it's like this big production. But with this, it's like no big deal. We have a big old tarp. All the brass falls on the tarp, so that's easy to clean up afterwards. And then everything out there is disposable. It's a block of ice or small cubes of ice or, you know, all the organic stuff, the fruits and veggies and all that. And then everyone shoots and has a great time, and that's it. It's a lot of fun. you know, and the kids love it because, of course, everything out there is a reactive target. Every time they hit a fruit or a potato or whatever, it bounces, boom, explodes, it
dances.
Your kids loved it.
Yeah, it was a blast, you know. And do the same thing, like we do the same deal after, you know, now it's after Halloween. We'll be going out as soon as the family taking our pumpkins. You know, we've got 6 or 8 pumpkins, and we'll go out. We'll detonate one with some Tannerite or something so the kids have a good time, and then the rest of them, they'll just shoot because a pumpkin can take a lot of 22 rounds, man, a lot. You know, and so they'll just keep shooting it until eventually it's just nothing. And then they're picking out the tiny little spots of pumpkin out there. Oh, look, there's a little chunk of it, and they're shooting that. And so it's increasing their skill and their ability, but without being super serious about it. We're just having a good time. You know, the organic shoots are a good time. So you got to shoot for fun. You got to have a good time. Shooting is fun, and fun is an important element of learning too. You know, that's a big thing that we talk about in our training classes, is people have a good time. And, you know, a lot of people like to train with us because of how we talk to each other and how we act, you know, and everything. I mean, we're kind of just relaxed and we're having a good time. We give each other a hard time and we make a lot of jokes about life and, you know, experiences we've had and stuff like that. We're not super serious. I mean, you know, part of it is kind of when we're teaching a defensive class, make no bones about it. We're there to teach people how to hurt other people. You know, that's definitely what we're there to do. But we can have some fun while we're doing it.
Oh yeah.
You know, we don't have to be super duper serious about this has got to be done in this way.
No knife hands allowed.
Try not to knife hand anybody. So anything else you guys have to say about that? Shooting for fun?
Do it more often.
Yeah. Yeah. Do it more often. I can't. I'm still, I was like 10,
he's still reeling ago. That it's yeah. been that long.
That it's like, been almost a year.
Yeah. Almost a year since the last time I shot for fun.
Yeah. Yeah. Sad story, man.
It's terrible.
We'll have to change that.
Yeah.
Change that.
I guess so.
We need to
change that too, yeah.
Speaking of shooting for fun. November 28th.
28th.
So actually it's Saturday. But
Saturday.
John Cena.
Will not be there.
Will not be there. CBA, State Director of Concerned Veterans for America. We're having a Veterans Patriotic Americans shoot. If you are a veteran or a patriotic American and want to find more about what our organization does, and you just want to get away from your crazy relatives the Saturday after Thanksgiving.
Crazy relatives.
Shoot us an email. We're going to be pushing it out on Facebook, Arms Room. mdobson@cv4a.org. I'm not hard to find. Shoot Glenn a message. Shoot John a message. Shoot me a message. Whatever. We got about 40 slots, ammo's provided, food's provided, stuff's going to explode, things are going to shoot full auto. It's going to be a good time, and you can learn how to get more involved with what it is we do of trying to make the system better for veterans and whistleblowers at the VA.
And this is the shooting event that was just like the ones we promoted earlier this year. We did like 5 or 6 of those.
Yeah.
Then we kind of took a little bit of a break this fall, and now we're back at it. So this is similar to that event. So for our listeners who've heard that kind of stuff, or if you had a chance to attend, make sure you come out because it's going to be an awesome event.
If you live out of state and you're going to be in state around that time, perfect excuse to get away from
totally
relatives.
Totally worth coming out.
Yeah.
Totally worth coming out.
Because this is going to be probably the craziest one so far.
Yeah. No cost to you to show up.
Yeah.
There's absolutely no cost for this event. You show up, you shoot our guns with our ammo. We'll have some full auto stuff out there. We're not sure what we're going to do yet. Probably more submachine guns because those always are very popular. Who knows? Might bust out the belt feds. We'll see what happens. But we'll definitely have the sub guns out there. We'll probably have some explosions out there. We'll definitely have a good time.
Always food.
Yeah, and there'll always be food. And you guys will get to meet Matt, State Director of CVA, find out more about what the CVA is doing for veterans. And you don't have to be a veteran to be involved with veterans organizations. You know, feel free to jump in and see what you can do to help out. You know, there's plenty of patriotic Americans who want to help.
Some of our best volunteers are, they come to everything. They do everything. They've never served a day in their life, but, you know, they see the cause and they see the relevance. And so here they are.
Check it out.
Yeah.
Come out November 28th. And don't forget about Open Range Day. Speaking of shooting for fun. Don't forget about a perfect place to shoot for fun. Cowtown Range, Open Range Days this Saturday and Sunday, which is the 14th and 15th of November, also the 21st and 22nd of November, and then again the second and third weekends of December. We're going to have Open Range Days. Come on out and shoot. It's a great time. It's $20 for the whole day. You get to come out, hang out, and there'll be full auto vendors and all kinds of other cool stuff out there. Absolutely no reason to not come out. If you're tired of waiting at the other public ranges and tired of the crazy Nazi-ish RSOs and all that crazy madness, go ahead and come on out and see what it's like to actually shoot and enjoy yourself for once.
Heck yeah.
So that's it. Anything else you got, John, before we leave?
Do not confuse Veterans Day and Memorial Day.
Yes, thank you.
Wednesday is Veterans Day.
Yes.
Veterans Day.
Actually, worse, I would rather think people confuse veterans with memorials than memorials with veterans.
Yeah, that's true.
Because that,
but you know, get your holidays
straight. As long as people will make those two holidays the veteran holidays, like, everyone makes every holiday about veterans.
Right? Yeah.
Like, Labor Day, let's thank the veterans who fought to allow labor unions to form. Like,
no.
Wait.
You know.
But, anyhow, take an extra second. Talk to a vet. Thank a vet. Sit down and have lunch with
them. Ask how they feel about everything.
Yeah, ask them. Talk to them
for their service. Ask me how I feel. Ask me what my thoughts are on stuff. You might be surprised. You might learn something.
You might.
Buy that vet who you work with in the office.
Take him out to lunch.
Buy him lunch. Buy him a coffee. Show him you care. You don't know how you reaching out to a vet could stop them from doing
something stupid.
Permanent solutions to temporary problems type stuff. So, you know.
Can I give a shout out to a good organization that's helping out with that?
Go for it, buddy.
It's called Lift for the 22. Look up them on Facebook. They're getting dudes with PTSD, combat stress, or getting them in the gym lifting weights to kind of as their outlet. It's a great nonprofit. The guy's been kind of funding it himself. I'm not soliciting donations. I'm just saying look into it. And if you like lifting weights and you have connections at your gym, shoot the guy an email. His name's Carter Davis. But look him up on Facebook. It's Lift for the 22. Good group.
Right on. All right, we're going to be doing our new schedule for the next 3 months, December, January, February, so make sure if you have some show ideas or some guests that you'd like to see on the show, we're building our calendar right now. We've already got a lot of really cool stuff lined up.
John Cena.
Including John Cena, who is not actually on the schedule. But
I would love for you to be here.
John Cena, please, I would love for you to come on the show. It'd be fantastic. But if you've got some ideas about show topics or show guests that you'd like to see or hear on the show, feel free to email us info@trainingaz.com. And that's how we build our schedule, is literally all from our listener feedback. So make sure that you let us know. Next week, we're going to have Rigo from TacFlow in here talking to us about their new indoor facility. It's literally just right down the road from us. It's this incredibly awesome indoor training facility and total movable mount towns and all kinds of cool structures that they've done. It's available for airsoft and paintball, but even better than that, it's available for training. So he's going to be in the studio talking with us about all that cool stuff. And, of course, TacFlow, very involved with the Craft International folks and all that as well. So Rigo's got a fantastic background. He's going to talk to us about that. Until next time, stay aware, stay safe, and train hard. You've been listening to The Arms Room.